Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Is there no sweeter sound than that of your own name buried in cheers and applause? Of course there isn't. And speaking of sounds, here's a question for you. Does your life have a soundtrack? Mine does, but it's mostly stuck inside my head. Movie studios have guys called sound designers, and they figure out what music and sound should accompany what we see in the screen. Not to be confused with Foley artists who actually fabricate some of those sounds. Those guys get to smash grapefruits and break glass, stuff like that. Always thought that might be a fun gig. As a kid, I worked pretty steadily as an actor, especially in the voiceover side. And I recall being in the studio doing something for, I think it was an orange juice company, and they needed the sound of frying bacon. And they didn't have a library of effects for some reason, and I'm thinking, I don't see a stove in here. Then some guy pulls a hunk of cellophane out of a duffel bag, rolls it into a ball, and as he squeezes it, presto. You could almost smell that bacon frying, just like I'm doing now. Kind of cool, huh? All my life, there's been a sound designer living in my head. I have a sound or a tune for almost everything I do. I rarely articulate them, though. That would freak people out, especially my kids. And about that guy in my head, when I was a toddler, my old man told me to stop picking my nose. Of course, I needed to know why. It improved my respiration, made me feel better, and was an exercise in manual dexterity. Well, those were not my reasons at the time, but Dad told me there was a little man who lived way, way up inside my nose who would bite my finger. I actually believed him for a couple days. It would be so cool if there were some gizmo, maybe some AI thing that could instantly manifest the tunes or effects in our brains as audible sound, full high fidelity, just the way a radio pulls sound out of the air. And it would have to happen instantaneously. Just think of the music or the sound effect and bam, there it is, emanating from you as if your entire body was a speaker or a tuning fork. Maybe having a sound designer in my head is from watching too many cartoons as a kid. Whatever the action was, they always had a musical track or an effect to underscore the mood. And they were all these signature sounds, huh? If somebody croaked, it was falling in love, falling in lust. But how much fun would it be to walk into school or the office, damn near anywhere you go, and have some invisible speaker surround you, playing the audio you choose, like, or, but of course that could be risky if one selected something impossibly cool and didn't present the commensurate appearance. Well, one would run the risk of looking like a complete asshole. Like you drive up to the party in a rusty Honda with squealing brakes and you've got that James Bond thing playing. Well, people may be hearing 007, but they'll be thinking. Now, why do certain sounds come to signify certain events or moods? It's more than just major or minor chords. Why did bongos indicate Fred and Barney were about to haul ass, while a speeding bullet meant the Roadrunner was on the move? Why is that little fanfare of the muted trumpet synonymous with losing? I think they used to play that on Let's Make a Deal when some chooch picked door number 3 and went home with a toaster instead of the new convertible that was behind door number 2. I only recently realized why. I even watched game shows as a kid and why I chose the ones that I did. For instance, I could not give a shit about Jeopardy. I mean, I spent all damn day in school, thinking and studying. So when I got home and parked my ass in front of the Zenith with a freshly made PB&J and a tumbler full of Moo Juice, was I gonna sit there and watch one nerd at a podium ask questions of three other nerds. Isn't that what school is? Jeopardy is like watching school. A half-hour pop quiz. What kind of diseased mind enjoys that? And then the host would respond to the wrong answer with the correct answer as if he knew it all along, and it wasn't on the index card he was holding in his hand. And that stupid rule. All answers must be in question form. I always wanted to see some contestants say, oh, right, yeah, question form. Alex, why don't you go fuck yourself? And why in game show land does the double buzzer always herald incorrect? And that perky chime means you're right. Why is it always two buzzers for wrong and not just one? Who decided those things? And how did they become fixtures in our culture? We really have this extensive lexicon of nonverbal communication that everybody knows. And as far as I know, there is no glossary or index for it. It's kind of instinctive. But maybe in faraway places, right answers get a double buzzer and wrong ones get the chime. I first wondered about such things when I had a girlfriend who was from South Korea. She taught me a lot of Korean words and turned me on to Korean barbecue joints. Ooh, and she really hated commies. And one day, we were hanging out and somebody's dog was barking, and I complained about it, and she said, yeah, listen to that thing. Mung, mung, mung. And I said, what? And she said, that damn dog. Mung, mung, mung. And I said, what the hell is mung, mung, mung? And she told me, that's what dogs say. And I told her, no, dogs say woof, woof, or bow, wow. But she insisted that in Korea, dogs say, mung, mung, mung. And for a second, I thought, well, hell, maybe dogs do sound different in Korea. As a kid, I hung out with my Uncle John at this tavern in the mountains where they had all kinds of stuffed trophies, you know, elk and deer and bobcats and pheasants. But the strangest one of all was this deer that looked like any other deer, except he had two enormous sharp incisors curling up from his lower jaw, right over his nose. I mean, he looked like one of his parents had to have been a wild boar. The bartender told me he shot the thing in Korea, and that's how some deer looked over there. Well, I only half believed him. It would have been pretty easy for some kooky taxidermist to gimmick something like that, but turns out it was not a gimmick. You can see a picture of a Korean deer at thatlarryshow.com in the July 2018 archive. In that episode called Strange Magic, you'll discover a magic trick I witnessed that has defied explanation by some of the greatest professional magicians in the world. Check it out. So anyway, my girlfriend and I got into this lengthy discussion about the sound dogs make and the words that best describe it. Now, the most realistic spelling of a barking dog, I believe, was one by Stephen King. It may have been from the book Hearts in Atlantis, I'm not sure, but in it, there was always a dog barking in the distance, and the sound that dog made was spelled R-O-O-P. Roop, roop. Onomatopoeia, it's called, words that mimic the sounds they describe. Meow, chirp, roar, bang, words like that. I've never heard a barking dog say bow wow. Woof woof is better, but still, it's a stretch, huh? But roop, roop, that's pretty damn accurate, at least for a larger dog. They do tend to say roop, roop. Moose, the official guard dog of the Take No Shit Dojo, is only 16 pounds, so roop, roop is, well, out of his vocal range. However, Moose does not yap. He barks. Not exactly a baritone, but he does a full-throated bark that indicates he is still in possession of both testicles, which he will always be. Every vet he's ever seen has wanted to cut those balls off, all with the bullshit about overpopulation of dogs. And when I tell them Moose never has unprotected sex, that usually shuts them up, and they give me a weird look. But back to my Korean girlfriend. In Western countries, when somebody signals they want you to approach them, we sort of cock an arm at the elbow and wave our hand towards our own body, right? Or there's the more subtle upturned index finger that curls and beckons. Not so in Korea. There, the come closer gesture is an outstretched hand, palm down, with the fingers curling inward to a fist, repeated. Seeing somebody do that gesture would not make me think to approach them. I'd think they were working through arthritis, or maybe waving bye-bye to ants. It is possible my girlfriend was zooming me about the dog barks and the hand signals. She did have a mischievous streak. Another reason I preferred other game shows to Jeopardy was the prizes. Jeopardy gave away cash, but you never saw the money. It was just a number on a screen or a board. That doesn't have much meaning to a younger kid. But a gleaming new convertible on a slowly rotating turntable, ooh, that ignites desire. And if the car wasn't sexy enough, there was always one of those merchandise-stroking women, huh? Not girls, women, who would take long, spike-heeled strides across that shiny-floored stage and extend a languid arm and run a perfect tapered feminine hand with lacquered nails along the fender of that automobile as she leered into the camera. Sometimes she'd open the door, give America a flash of supple thigh as she slipped behind the wheel and patted the passenger seat. That was a powerful, irresistible summoning, a call I wanted to answer in the worst way. They had names like Carol and Janice and Veronica, names with class and sophistication. They were never named Mitzi or Judy. They were long and lean, with perfect teeth, and every move they made was fluid and effortless. I didn't even know or even see women that looked like them. They didn't chew gum. They never got spinach caught in their teeth. And when they patted that car seat, I'd have sat on it even if it was a puddle of burning napalm. The game show hosts were invariably guys. Has there ever been a chick game show host? Maybe that's something feminists can bitch about. But how the hell did those guys keep their cool with Carol or Janice within range of scenting their perfume? It was a mystery to me. Maybe once the show was taped, Janice would pat the seat of that convertible and off they'd go. Who knows? There was another signature sound that was used to indicate a good outcome, a good reveal, as opposed to a kick-in-the-nuts loss. Just as the prize door slid back, or the curtain was whisked away, revealing a new 17-foot Glastron speedboat! Yeah, they play that sting of a harp usually before the reveal, which sent a clear message that something good was going to happen. And the game show announcers all talk that way. Why? Did Korean game show announcers speak that way too? American game show announcers, they had a smile on their voice that was so broad and stiff their faces might crack. I used to wonder if those guys talked that way when they went home. Honey, what's that I see spinning in that beautiful new Amana radar range? Marketers have been using sound and music and decor forever to get us to buy their stuff, right? It's called atmospherics. And they pay people a lot of jing to create the right atmospherics. You know, that Hollister vibe or Anthropology, that kind of thing. And restaurants do the same thing, but sometimes, very often, they go too far. Some time ago, I was stuck waiting for a flight. Had lunch at some bizarre airport theme restaurant. The motif was World War I flying ace in a French chateau. Biplanes on the ceiling and Enfield rifles and pie plate helmets, shit like that. And whoever put together their atmospherics really believed that more was more. So there was this continuous audio loop of some military choir piped through Marconi vintage speakers for that period authenticity, I guess. I think they had an overdub of dogfighting Fokkers complete with machine gun fire. After 11 minutes or so of that, The loop repeated. It was fucking crazy and eerie and disturbing. I called for the check after the appetizer. So sounds and music definitely set moods to attract or repel, make you open your wallet or run like hell. And there are thousands of musical tracks composed to trigger specific moods like those the sound design guys need, huh? Tracks for the apocalypse or dystopias or meditation or yoga. Cinematic tracks built to convey tension, anxiety, terror. Those would be good ones to have oozing from your pores when you walk into a car dealership. That might make them more likely to negotiate just to get you the fuck out of there. I wonder what would be a wise choice for a performance review of the boss. Maybe some satanic chant with a backtrack of small arms fire. Or maybe the Manson chicks, huh? Or it would be fun to walk around with a continuous loop of our friend Cardi B, just so people know where you stand.
Suck my dick. Suck my dick.
That works pretty good for general purposes, no? Well, whatever the soundtrack of your life is, don't keep it bottled up. Let it out. Be bold, be brave, and be heard. So I'll thank you for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter. We have a lot of fun there between episodes. Just plug That Larry Show into the search bar and you will find us. And for a big archive of 254 other episodes, go to thatlarryshow.com. There's always more content and commentary there. And if you want access to dozens of bonus episodes where we get a little more personal and contentious, go to patreon.com/thatlarryshow. Once you join the dojo, you can ask me or our deep bench of wise and worldly senseis to help you conquer any problem that is vexing you. Email me at thatlarryshow@gmail.com and we'll do our best for you. We have a fantastic track record in helping people deal with whatever life is throwing at them. I'll see you next Tuesday or thereabouts, and until that time, take no shit and mung mung mung.
I'm John McAfee, and I love That Larry Show.